Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 13, 2015. A top general topples president of Burundi in a bloodless coup after days of protest.
Thousands of people in the streets of Bujumbura celebrating an apparent coup by a former commander of the armed forces here against President Pierre Nkurunziza.
And fuel shortages in Juba and around the country continues to affect commuters.
They used to tell us that no fuel. That's why the taxi used to delay us. Sometimes we used to get a motorbike. From Jebel to Konyokonye is £15, and with the taxi just £2.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. We start today with news from Burundi, where former intelligence chief says he has ousted President Pierre Nkurunziza. Major General Godfrey Nyobera announced on private radio stations earlier today that Mr. Nkurunziza, who is out of the country attending a regional summit on crisis in Burundi, is no longer president. Nyobera called on political leaders in Burundi to work together to rethink how the country can be governed and to organize elections. VOA's Gabe Joslo is in Burundian capital. He says tens of thousands of Burundians, including soldiers, took to the streets of Bujumbura to celebrate the announcement that Nkurunziza is no longer in power.
Right now we have about just tens of thousands of people in the streets of Bujumbura celebrating an apparent coup against President Pierre Nkurunziza, who has been the subject of just weeks of demonstrations against his plans to run for a third term in office, which protesters here say violates the Arusha Peace Accord that brought peace to this country about 15 years ago. We are waiting to see whether this apparent coup from this one particular commander really represents the views of the entire armed forces, or if it's just the views of one particular person. So it's really an uncertain situation right now, though if you were to walk through the streets of downtown Bujumbura, you would think of it as just a gigantic celebration. People really are declaring victory after many, many weeks of taking to the streets, clashing with police, and demonstrating for this cause that against the president.
But Joslo told VOA's Peter Heinlein that in parts of Bujumbura, demonstrators clash with police. Joslo also says Mr. Nkurunziza's office insists that he is still in power.
There were some major protests this morning. We were right in the middle of it in the Musaga neighborhood of Bujumbura. This has been the scene of a lot of clashes during the demonstrations the past few weeks. Basically, the protesters trapped the police from two sides, approached on two separate fronts, and the throwing stones, throwing some Molotov cocktails in some instances, and the police responded mostly with tear gas. We also heard a lot of gunshots. We saw them firing water cannons as well to disperse the protesters. This was one of the biggest protests and the biggest clashes since these demonstrations began, but they have been going on like this on a daily basis for the last few weeks.
We know that General Niyombare, who announced the dismissal of President Nkurunziza, is a respected figure, but can you tell us, is this coup for real, for sure, or is it possible that the president could return tomorrow and reclaim power?
That is exactly the question that we and many other people in Burundi are asking themselves at this moment. It's not certain that this commander speaks for the entire armed forces or if he is speaking for an individual faction. And already we've seen the Burundi presidency deny that there's any coup taking place and that the situation is under control. So we're waiting to see what could happen in the coming days. I think if it could be a big problem if these people who are out celebrating today find out tomorrow that, in fact, the president is still sticking around and that their efforts have so far been in vain. And I worry that there could be further violence if that is the case.
That was VOA's East Africa correspondent Gabe Joslo speaking earlier today with Peter Heinlein about the situation in Burundi, where an army general claims to have ousted President Pierre Nkurunziza. We have just heard that General Niyombare has ordered the country's borders closed. The UN Human Rights Office says it is alarmed at intense fighting going on in South Sudan's oil-rich Unity State. It says SPLA soldiers and armed youth are creating havoc and civilians are bearing the brunt of the fighting. It says many are fleeing into the bush and to other areas as their villages are burned to ground. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein has more.
The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights says it is alarmed by escalating violence involving government and opposition forces in South Sudan's strategic oil-rich Unity State. Since fighting erupted at the end of April, the agency says about 2,200 civilians have sought refuge and protection at the UN mission in South Sudan in the state capital, Bantou. It says many others have fled into the bush near villages south of Nialdu, Koch, and Lir. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville says about a quarter of the new arrivals are children under five, and two-thirds of them are women and girls. He says there are alarming reports of attacks, abductions, and sexual violence by armed men around the UN site in Bantou.
At least 28 villages have been attacked and civilians killed and maimed. Others have been abducted, and there's also been conflict-related sexual violence and looting of property. All the villages attacked have been burned, and cattle and other properties have been looted.
Colville says people who fled the area told aid workers that those committing these atrocities are soldiers from the Sudan People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, and armed youth.
Mobilized youths are reportedly wearing civilian clothes, but are armed with AK-47s, whereas the SPLA soldiers are armed with rocket-propelled grenades, tanks, and mounted pickups, in addition to other weapons.
Members of the SPLA, which is South Sudan's army, are fighting for both sides in the conflict. United Nations and other aid agencies pulled out of Northern Unity State over the weekend because of the fighting, leaving an estimated 300 civilians without essential aid. The 17-month-long war between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar has left the world's newest country in chaos, with more than 1 million people either displaced within South Sudan or as refugees in neighboring countries. The rainy season is not far off. UN agencies are urging the warring factions to stop or ease back on the fighting so people can plant their crops and avoid hunger later this year. In the meantime, the UN warns that attacks on civilians and infrastructure violate international humanitarian law and human rights laws. It says alleged crimes must be investigated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Toby Lancer, says he is deeply concerned about the fate of people living in parts of Unity and Upper Nile states where there has been heavy fighting in recent weeks. Lancer says aid agencies have had to withdraw more than 100 relief workers from two states since the beginning of May because of the fierce fighting between government and rebel forces. He tells reporter Charlton Doki in Juba that he fears South Sudan could be on the brink of economic collapse after 17 months of the conflict.
The decision to withdraw aid workers is one of the toughest decisions we take. You know, we have to account for our own people. Unfortunately, since the onset of the crisis in December 2013, we've had over 15 colleagues whom we've lost.
Lost, when you say lost, you mean they've been killed?
Yes. And enough is enough. We cannot have non-governmental organization staff or staff of UN agencies in harm's way when the violence reaches the levels which it currently has in parts of Unity State and indeed in parts of Upper Nile State.
This withdrawal of aid workers from these areas, how do you think it will affect humanitarian aid operations?
The impact of this, of course, is immediate and evident to the people who require emergency relief. We're talking about medicines, food, blankets.
given this temporary withdrawal of aid workers, how many people will not be reached in the meantime?
Well, we know that in the case of the southern half of Unity State, so south of Bentiu in particular, there were over 300,000 people who would ordinarily have been receiving one form of assistance or another this week. And that's not happening because we've had to withdraw, because the violence was too severe.
The 300,000 people that the United Nations and other aid organizations are unable to reach at the moment, what do you think will happen to them in the meantime?
Well, I'm very worried that they are in their villages if they're lucky, but because of the violence, certainly over 100,000 of the people in these particular parts of Unity State have been displaced. They will be in the bush or in the swamplands with their own traditional coping mechanisms ever more stretched. If somebody gets seriously ill, the person can die. So without medical assistance, without shelter, without the most basic foodstuffs that people need to survive, they don't make it. So it's key for us to get back to those areas just as soon as we can, so that we can reopen the clinics, so that if a child is sick and needs attending to, there's someone there to help. We want to continue with the distributions of seeds and tools. This is the height of the planting season. This is not the moment when people should be fleeing from their villages or in fear of going to the fields. This is precisely the time when they should be tilling the land and sowing their crops.
What do you think needs to happen for the United Nations and other aid organizations to be able to deliver the services they want to deliver?
Well, to be very clear, we're working with the parties to the conflict to make sure that they understand who we are and why we need to be in the field, and to seek and gain the reassurances that our work is understood and that our staff will be safe. Once we know that, we will be ready to go back. We are still working in 80 locations in South Sudan. So the withdrawal of the staff from three locations in Unity State and two locations in Upper Nile State, it's a problem for the civilians in need in those areas. But I want to reassure everybody that we're doing everything we can with all concerned to get back to those areas just as soon as we can.
Other than the fighting in Unity State and Upper Nile, what other concerns do you have about the current situation in the country?
Well, I think the single biggest concern for South Sudan is the absence of peace. It's the continued fighting. It's the populations living in fear. It's the tensions between different communities that exist in so many parts of the country. It's the pressures that the economic situation adds to this already very grave political impasse. You know, what you have in South Sudan is a country that, of course, is relatively poor in terms of human development indices, compounded by 17 months of violence. And now what seems to be imminent is this economic collapse. The currency is losing value very, very quickly. We understand that there are no reserves in the central bank. Markets are really severely strained, and this is putting even more hardship on the lives of people in urban areas, but of course also in rural areas of the country. So the level of need in South Sudan is higher than ever.
That was Toby Lansa, the UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan. He spoke to Charlton Doki in Juba earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Civil society organizations react to the decision by the parliament to pass a bill to monitor NGOs. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
does religion influence your daily decision making?
Yes, I'm a Muslim. It does. There are do's and don'ts, so I have to balance and weigh my options. Yes, my religion influences me.
Yes, my religion influenced my daily life. Like every time I think about how to do good things, I think about what my church taught me. Like, do not steal. The Bible says do not steal. I do not steal because the religion taught me so.
Religion is like something that gives good morals to me in my daily life. And if I have to do things, I do them correctly because of religion.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Civil society activists are cautiously applauding yesterday's passage of an NGO bill that places restrictions on non-governmental organizations operating in South Sudan. A senior policy advisor with South Sudan NGO Forum thinks officials should have consulted with NGOs while drafting the legislation. Other activists warn a restriction to hire mostly South Sudanese citizens may force some NGOs to leave. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
NGO's Forum Advisor, FOC, thinks the bill is long overdue. First introduced in Parliament in 2013, the legislation's unanimous approval yesterday, FOC says, is a relief.
It's very important to note that NGOs are actually welcoming regulation in the sense that it would be much easier for NGOs to operate in South Sudan in a regulatory framework, because right now it can be quite inconsistent and sometimes it's hard to know exactly how to follow the laws. So NGOs would really benefit from a very strong bill.
Fox says NGOs have had to adhere to a series of complicated regulations from government officials, which slowed down urgently needed services for South Sudanese citizens. However, Fox says there are still some problems in the bill, including certain restrictions on civic society instead of regulating and fostering their work for a vibrant democratic country. These restrictions, including requiring NGOs to operate with objectives of registration without involving in other areas of needs. Another controversial clause in the bill, Fox says, is the placing of all NGOs and civic society groups under the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or SSRRC. It is a body that deals in facilitating and coordination of humanitarian affairs only. Fox says the 300 members of the South Sudan NGO Forum engage in a wide range of activities, including peace building, civic education, and human rights advocacy, among others.
By lumping all of those activities into one bill and all of those different kinds of NGOs under the supervision of the RRC, that we might not see the kind of regulation, the diverse regulation of NGOs that we need.
The bill is widely expected to be signed into law by President Salva Kiir. It requires all NGOs to renew their registrations within 3 months and achieve an employment threshold of 80%, at all levels for South Sudanese nationals. International NGOs will also be required to open bank account in South Sudan and recruit locals regardless of their ethnicity, religious belief, or geographical location. Idemon Yakani, the executive director for the Juba-based Community Empowerment Organization, or SEPO, says Section 6 of the bill warns NGOs and civil society groups about discriminating against South Sudanese. Yakani says this section of the bill falls below international standards.
As per UN Universal Declaration on Human Rights, that the principle of discrimination that applies to all of us, being national or being foreigner, as long as a human being, you can't be discriminated on whatever basis is.
Yakani says the bill also gives the government registrar the right to deny and monitor NGOs, something he calls, quote, a big disappointment. A government minister will provide guidelines and regulations for NGOs' works, according to the bill. Fox believes that measures to strengthen cooperation between the government and NGOs are needed now for a smooth implementation of the bill.
I think it's going to be very important for NGOs to be consulted in the development of rules and regulations. This bill has the potential to have a very negative impact on the operations of NGOs, and as a result, it could cost the lives of South Sudanese people that are relying on NGOs for the delivery of humanitarian assistance.
Fox says the 17-month-old conflict means that many South Sudanese are depending on NGOs to get medicines, education, and food. United Nations agencies such as the World Food Programme and UNICEF and the International Committee of the Red Cross or ICRC will not be covered by this bill. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
The persistent fuel shortages in South Sudan's capital, Juba, is taking a heavy toll on commuters, traders, and transport providers. Although officials have tried to offer a solution to the crisis by providing 16 new commuter buses from the police service, people still must wait for hours to get to their destinations. Mungume Debs Rakarinj has this report for VOA from Juba.
Before the fuel shortages began, about 3 months ago, 19-year-old Sharon Lillian woke up at 5:30 each morning to catch the nearest bus in Jebel, a Juba suburb. She needed to reach Konyokonyo Market early, where she buys second-hand clothes for sale in Jebel Market, then resells them around Juba. Today, Lillian has been waiting for a taxi for nearly an hour, with no luck.
They used to tell us that no fuel. That's why the taxi used to delay us. Sometimes we used to get a motorbike. From Jebel to Konyokonyo is £15, and with the taxi, just £2.
Lillian says the fuel shortage in Juba has hurt her business. She either waits for a taxi and loses out on finding the best second-hand clothing deals or hopes a boda-boda, a far more expensive means of transport, which eats into her profits.
And sometimes I used to reach even late, at around 7:30 like that, just because of the taxi, because of the transport issues. That's why they used to delay us.
Lillian says she used to earn between 100 and 150 pounds of profit a day from the clothes business. Now she earns 60 pounds if she's lucky. After a long wait, a bus arrives in Lillian's neighborhood. The bus is known as Bonga, travel many routes around town, and cost not more than £2. Lillian scrambles aboard, but there are no seats, so she must stand during the entire trip.
Others used to stand even in the, sometimes in a chair they used to sit four. The seat which people used to sit three, used to sit four, like that.
But Lillian says she'd rather stand and save money than lose all her profits to transport fees. Boda-boda driver Daniel Williams says he has to increase his fees to make a living. He says at least once a week he must queue for hours at a petrol station only to be told there is no fuel. He says fuel is sometimes available on the black market in 1.5-liter plastic bottles, but is simply too expensive.
We used to buy it at 15, but right now if we got those road sellers, they are now selling at £30 or £35. And me, since the fuel was not there, I bought a bottle at £50 at the Jebel Road here.
As a result, William says he has had to double his fares. But he says few customers are willing to pay that much.
Before the crisis, I was supposed to go to 50 as a profit. If I pay 30, I will reserve 20 for tomorrow use. So now it is a problem. There's nothing I reserve. Only I spent for the family. I did not reserve for tomorrow or for my future. I did not reserve.
Some petrol station owners who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity say they can't buy fuel because they can't obtain US dollars. Paul Adong, the managing director of the state-owned Nile Petroleum, said in March that the global reduction in oil prices combined with the increase in the foreign exchange rates has caused the fuel shortage, which has only increased over the past 2 months. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Rwakarinj in Juba.
South Sudanese university students studying in Kampala are the latest victims of the long conflict in South Sudan. The students say their country's conflict and economic crisis prevent them from successfully completing their studies. Some say they are missing weeks at a time at university as they wait for money transfer from their cash-strapped parents back home. Bonifacio Taban has the story for VOA from Kampala.
South Sudanese parents have to wire US dollar to the children who are studying at regional universities to allow them to pay their tuitions and cover some living expense. But some of the students, like Zandia's Becky, say lately the money never seemed to come. Becky said she missed class for a month and a half because her parents were unable to send funds from Juba to pay her tuition bills.
I have to come and just wait for my money from here. They will send. But since I came here, I stayed no money. Up to now, I'm still waiting. I have balance.
As exam approached, Becky said he's worried about the new tuition measures introduced by Kampala International University.
In our school here, if you have balance of even 500 shillings, they will tell you to go and pay. You clear, then they will give you examination card. But I'm not sure if I will sit for exam.
Becky is not alone in her dilemma. Many South Sudanese expats around the region have been hard hit by the strengthening U.S. dollar and the weakening South Sudanese pound. Kampala University student Kai Low said he has only been able to pay a fraction of his tuition fees because of the unfavorable exchange rate.
I did not even clear like 80% of my tuition because dollar and all this, you know. In South Sudan, we have parents that afford like 3,000 pounds for their children, you know, to go to school. And now that dollar is 1,200. What if you put 3,000? It will be like 200 US dollar, whereby you cannot afford like the amount that needed by school.
The hardship faced by South Sudanese student study abroad is nothing new. In September last year, President Salva Kiir donated $150,000 to a South Sudanese student union in Kampala. The union said the money would be used to help the many South Sudanese students facing financial difficulties because of the conflict back home. Low said before there's economic stability in South Sudan, there's need for peace.
When economic crisis gets stable is when you stop fighting, because as per now, we are investing just in war, but we are not gaining, because it's good when you gain, economy can get stabilized. The only way that we can stop this, you know, sometime a government can decide to do it for other people, not for yourself. And I was like, government have to do something and bring an end to all this.
South Sudan officials have appealed to neighboring countries for help in rebuilding the shattered economy. Ugandan economic expert spent 2 days in Juba last week trying to chart a way out of the crisis. But Boy Keke Tural, a student at Ugandan Christian University, said no financial aid from South Sudan neighbor will help to turn around the country economy for as long as politicians continue to loot the young nation's national resource.
The huge reserves of oil money have been squandered by politicians and policymakers in the country. So where on earth would you think that any intervention in terms of monetary term will result into the betterment of economy? Of course, this money will go to individual pocket. At the end of the day, nothing will happen.
Most of South Sudan revenue comes from oil export, but crude output has been cut in half by the 17-month oil crisis, which has been poured mainly in the two oil-producing states of Unity and Upper Nile. In addition to that, global oil prices have fallen sharply, and critics of the South Sudan government said the bulk of revenues are being used to fund the military effort against rebels, leaving little for anything else, including helping students face their tuition. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting from Kampala.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Mungu Si by Kennedy. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your cars and your homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Waluniti, katro wazoniti, katro bakoniti, zimungu matia. Katro waluniti, katro wazoniti. katoba konite zimungu matia kondwa konia fizia konia azia konia mungu ni fera kondwa konia fizia konia azia konia.